A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters, May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Welcome, everybody, to this week's exciting episode.
What's going on here, then? Breakfast
at Tiffany's?
Yeah, it could be. If you know the quote, you know it.
I don't know it.
Ah, so. Yeah, if you know, you know.
You're better than me, then.
I know there's a few listeners that will 100% definitely know that. I'm looking at Tony.
I was going to say, it's going to be everybody in your little group chat. <isn't it>?
Yeah. But no, there'll be other people. It went viral a couple of years ago from a video. So they'll know. Okay. They'll know. If you know, you know.
Well, yeah, fair enough. If you know, you know. You know more than me.
No, not, well, today's episode, I might do.
You might. Why don't you say what we're talking about today?
Today we're doing the Enfield Poltergeist.
Which is something that has been requested, I think, several times. Now, yes, you may bring up stuff that I don't know today, mm-hmm. and I'll tell you why. Because I always get this one and 30 East Drive mixed up. Because they both took part in the 70s, both happened to a little girl in the house.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
I think a lot of people would already know this story.
I think they will.
It's very popular. It's probably one of the most famous hauntings of the UK, isn't it?
Definitely, yeah.
So I always thought it was the Enfield Haunting, but apparently it's the Enfield Poltergeist.
It can be whatever you want to present it as. It's, yeah.
Well, I've done both. The Enfield Haunting / Poltergeist.
Well, there we go. There's a good title, eh?
Yeah.
We might as well dive into it. Oh, just one thing. Mm. What is it with ghosts and like underage girls?
Well, my friend, I won't say you've got it in my head yet, but I might have an explanation for that at the end.
Okay.
Yeah, there was a study done, so I'll go into it. It's quite interesting. Some people would say it's a load of hoggle posh, but
right.
I don't know. There could be some elements of truth, but that does come back into it.
Fair enough. Okay.
So yeah, keep hold of that thought, because. Yeah, that's interesting.
Well, I've got my London bandana on.
Oh, yes.
Enfield is in London. I thought I'd support the cause.
Yep.
So let's go dive in.
Let's dive in. So in 1977 in Enfield, London, Peggy Hodgson was a 47-year-old mother of four, living in social housing with her two daughters, Janet, aged 11, Margaret, aged 13, and her two sons, Johnny, 10, and Billy, 7. Shortly before the incidents began, Peggy's husband had left her for another woman.
Ooh.
Not good.
There's already tension in the household then.
There is, yeah.
Really?
And that also may come back into it, depending on how
I thought it might.
Yeah. So, just like many divorces, this was extremely upsetting for Peggy and the children, but they were doing their best to move on and enjoy their lives until the poltergeist activity began.
Ooh. And how long, I don't suppose you probably actually know, how long after the separation this happened?
I think I read it was a matter of weeks.
Not long at all then?
No, not long at all. It's...
But they didn't move house or anything like that. It was in the same place that they'd always been.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
So in August of 77, Peggy called the Metropolitan Police to her rented home at 284 Green Street, saying she had witnessed furniture moving and that two of her four children had heard knocking sounds on the walls. A police constable reported witnessing a chair wobble and slide, but could not determine the cause of movement. Later claims included disembodied voices, loud noises, thrown objects, mainly toys,
right,
overturned furniture, and children levitating, and this was all over a period of 18 months. More than 30 people, including the neighbours, passers-by, investigators, police, and journalists, said they had witnessed several weird and spooky things happening in the house.
Yeah. Well, I think I would imagine that everybody is familiar with that famous picture of the levitating girl.
Mm.
Or did they say like two or three pictures like that? I can remember definitely one.
Yeah, there's two real famous ones.
Yeah.
But they took several. But I don't know.
I've seen the pictures a few times. Obviously, I'm not a photographic analyst or anything like that. I couldn't tell you whether they were genuine or hoaxed, faked, or
it's weird,
or whether it's just a bit of trick photography. Who knows?
We'll get into that.
Yeah,
we'll hold that because I've got of my own thoughts as well.
Okay,
on the camera,
because cool.
We briefly spoke about the movement of the camera and things, and
yeah
but anyone can Google the Enfield poltergeist levitating girl Janet. They'll see it, and
it'll be all over Google images.
It's really not that spooky if people are worried about getting scared.
So. No, it's not like 30 East Drive. You don't get like shadows in the doorway or anything like that with this one, do you? There's no sort of apparition. It's just literally
a girl in the middle of the air
floating. Yeah.
So one night, Janet and Margaret complained about their beds shaking, while Peggy had heard strange noises as if someone was dragging their feet along the floor. That night, with her four children, Peggy went next door to her neighbour's home, asking for help. Vic Nottingham, a former builder, and his son Gary, went back with Peggy to have a look at the home and investigate, to try and put the family at ease and possibly explain where or what the noises were. Vic and Gary heard the same knocking sounds, but even with Vic's experience in the construction industry and working with old homes himself, he couldn't explain the sounds or where they were coming from. Suspecting someone was playing a prank, Nottingham called the police at 1 a.m. Two officers arrived at the house and checked everywhere to find the source of the noises. They checked outside, all of the rooms, behind the walls, the pipes, but they found nothing. Then standing there in the living room, one officer looked at a chair to see it was moving side to side and then suddenly slid across the floor toward the kitchen wall. It moved 3 to 4 feet and then stopped. Right. So that's a policewoman seeing that.
Yeah. So you'd think it would be a credible source, wouldn't you?
Yeah. That's the one thing that keeps popping up where I'm kind of torn. Obviously, we will get into it, but there's so many witness accounts from all kinds of places, so police, journalists, and everything. And at some point, you got to say, are they all lying? Have they all seen something? Who knows? So in early September, Peggy made a phone call to the English newspaper, The Daily Mirror, explaining what was happening in their home. The newspaper sent a senior reporter, George Fallows, and photographer David Thorpe. Fallows was sceptical at first, thinking Peggy might be looking for a new and improved home from the council. However, both men witnessed similar activity.
The old pull a poltergeist trick.
Yeah.
It'll get me moved.
To be fair, it's not a bad way.
It's quite a cheeky little trick, that. My house is haunted. Yeah. I need a different one.
Yeah. It didn't work, but...
No.
Thorpe was struck on the eyebrow with a Lego brick and in the face as well.
Well, we all know how bad they can be to stand on.
Yeah.
Hitting you one in the eyebrow is not going to be pleasant either, is it?
No. And according to sources, it was quite a violent throw, even though they were Lego bricks and small toys and things.
Yeah, yeah.
It was never throwing knives or anything dangerous. It was always what was in the living room or in the right. in the girl's bedroom. It was thrown with some force.
Fair play.
But while they were unable to successfully capture anything on film, Fallows felt that this could not be a prank as the children were all with their mother in the same room.
What, and he was in a different room?
No, they were all together.
All together in the same room.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, so he's got his eyes on it. So if any of them had done it, he would have been... He would have seen it.
Because yeah, there's two of them. Obviously, the family's there. But he was also very sceptical. So he was looking for things and keeping his eyes on the family, thinking that they were pranking him.
Yeah, yeah, fair enough. It might be the ghost of Harry Price, remember, from Bawley Rectory?
Oh, yeah, with his pebbles
flicking
in his
pebbles
pockets
at people.
But no, he confirms that he doesn't think the children are involved or anything. They were all in the same room. And even when they went to another room, say it was both of them, Thorpe and Fallows, if it was, say, just the mother in the room, stuff was still happening. But obviously, to throw things, the kids would have to be in the room. Supposedly, they did see some activity. So Fallows actually suggested they contact the Society for...
Psychical Research.
Yes, thank you. You knew I was going to mess up on that as well. And was put in touch with Morris Gross, a member of the Society. Gross came to the house and instantly noticed how scared and frightened the family were. After witnessing another chair move, he decided to stay. On September 10th, the Daily Mirror ran the story under the headline, "The House of Strange Happenings." Other news outlets then became interested. A BBC reporter called Ros Morris was sent to cover the case, and with Gross, spent the night in the home witnessing moving chairs again, knocking on the walls, toys and kitchen cutlery being thrown, and boxes being hurled across the room.
Ooh, interesting night they had then.
Yeah. And I don't think the BBC reporter was actually meant to stay, but they actually decided, no, I actually want to see what's going on here.
Oh, they were invested in it then, yeah. Mm. That's good.
So one night, Thorpe and Gross rigged up a camera in the girls' room to see if they could capture anything, as this room, as well as the living room, was said to have the most activity.
Right, yeah.
So there is...
Where the teenagers were.
Yeah, yes.
Because
there
you
was,
say Margaret was 13 and Janet was 11. So, well, you're not quite a teenager, but, you know, yeah.
So this is where it's... I see different reports online. Majority of reports say that the living room was the one with most of the activity.
Okay.
Other reports say it was the girl's bedroom that had most of the activity, where right. the levitating and things were.
Yeah, yeah.
But because of different reports, I'm just going to say both of them were just as haunted as each other.
Yeah, well, let's say, I'm guessing on this. Maybe the living room had the more frequency of activity.
Mm-hmm.
The bedroom possibly had the more sensational activity, obviously, because, you know, levitating girls, that's quite sensational, isn't it? If it is genuine.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, let's put it that way then. Yeah,
yeah.
Living room, more. Bedroom, more intense.
Yes, yeah, we'll go with that. They were shocked to find the camera had captured images that seemed to show Janet being aggressively thrown from her bed, and the activity became increasingly violent, especially towards the youngest daughter, Janet. She was the one that had most of the activity.
Yeah, yeah.
The two sons don't really come into it. They're obviously scared and frightened, but they don't really seem to have anything happen to them. It just seems to be the two daughters, but mainly Janet, the youngest.
I'm trying to think from that, like a BBC series or something like that did the Enfield haunting, and not even sure if they even included the two sons in the family.
Yeah, it's odd.
Yeah.
One of the sons actually passed away at the age of 14.
R.I.P.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was Johnny. So he was 10 when this was happening.
Right.
And I'm pretty sure he passed away when he was 14. So, and I'll also just mention the camera took pictures every 15 seconds.
On a time lapse?
Yes. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So then it starts to pick up. And Janet's behaviour started to change. She became very angry. She would swear and curse a lot more than usual, and even had to be restrained on occasion. And also, she's very softly spoken and very like polite as well, Janet. So the fact that they're mentioning that she's swearing and cursing a lot more is really out of character for her, for an 11-year-old.
That is kind of telltale signs of a possession, isn't it?
Yes.
A classic sort of possession.
Mm-hmm.
We covered that in on the Halloween episode where I did the original story of The Exorcist.
Yeah,
and that's how that kind of started out. It was a little boy rather than a little girl, but yeah, he just became a different personality almost. You know, like you say, angry, uncooperative, aggressive. Yeah.
And she would actually switch the behavior. It was almost like bipolar. It would just there was a switch.
Yeah,
and she'd go from being angry and swearing and almost like a different person. And then you could say her name and she'd be right back to, hello, I'm back to Janet again. So it was, it's weird seeing the, there's videos
good
of
Enfield
it.
Accent there.
There's some good videos of it and things. So one morning, a neighbour walking by looked up to see Janet floating above the bed and hitting the window. Gross could not explain it and wondered if whatever was haunting this family could communicate.
Ooh, get the Ouija board out.
So, well, they should have done. I don't know.
Did they not do that?
No.
That would have been the obvious thing, wouldn't it? If you want to try and communicate, it's like 101.
I think they just tried speaking to it.
Oh, right, okay. Sure.
So Gross set up recording equipment, and began to ask questions.
Oh, okay, so they're trying to get, like, white noise answers. What is it, EVP?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So he set up recording equipment and began to ask questions. At first they were answered by knocks, but eventually a low, rough voice began to reply through Janet.
Ooh.
Everyone who heard it thought Janet was playing a prank at first, but the rough, gravelled voice and tone seemed very unlikely for an 11-year-old girl. And I've seen a video of the journalist, investigator person kind of chasing up on this, because a lot of people are like, she was just putting the voice on. Supposedly they did some tests and said it was virtually impossible for Janet to do that voice for so long at the frequency it is. And you can see these videos on YouTube and wherever, social media.
Okay, yeah.
And it does actually sound pretty freaky.
Yeah.
And you see her switch between her normal voice, which is an 11-year-old girl, high
quite
and
squeaky. Yeah, yeah.
And this voice is really like demonic and it's quite horrifying. It's not very nice at all.
It's saying very unnatural for an actual 11-year-old girl. Yeah.
And she said when the voice was coming out of her, she doesn't really remember it. She almost blacks out.
Okay.
But what she does remember and what she feels is someone behind her, almost like telling her what to
okay.
say or
yeah,
going
yeah,
through.
Yeah, yeah.
But she felt presence behind her is what Janet kept saying in interviews afterwards.
Fair enough, yeah.
So I urge everyone to go watch that video. So the voice was angry with more cursing and swear words, then named himself Bill. It described how he had died of a brain hemorrhage in the armchair of the house in the living room.
Ah.
Gross discovered that...
Someone killed Bill.
Yeah. Gross discovered that a man called Bill Wilkins had lived and died in the house. His son later on confirmed that that was exactly how his father died, in the exact placement, in the exact room.
Ah, okay.
And... supposedly,
How did we find out that the voice was called Bill?
Janet said,
okay, my name is
he's
Bill.
He's kind of speaking and saying, I'm
so
I'm
he
Bill.
Actually told them how he died and where he died.
So it was all coming out through Janet saying what had happened to this Bill Wilkins. And there was no way of Janet knowing this story.
No, it wouldn't be. An 11-year-old girl in 1977, you'd have to go to some kind of public archives to find out that information. I very much doubt she had the get-together to actually do that.
Yeah.
Just to pull off a hoax, you know?
And that's the one bit of evidence that makes me think, like, oh, maybe there is some sort of weird truth behind this, is how would she know the story unless she was directly told randomly by someone or a neighbour? But I can't see, with all of this stuff going on and them saying that they're getting haunted, I don't see how or why she would just suddenly come out with this.
No. But then you said that the son of this Bill confirmed that's how he spoke. He was a cursor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there'd probably like certain words or phrases that he would use that Janet might have.
Yes, 100%. Yeah. So everything that Bill said through Janet, the whole story, the way he spoke, everything, like you just said, his son has said that that's my dad.
Yeah.
That is exactly what he would say, do. That's how he died.
So
at this point, they were all like, oh, this is actually pretty freaky.
Well, it is.
Yeah.
You know, it's building up quite a case.
Mm-hmm. So in July 1978, Janet was admitted to hospital for tests, but she was deemed to be physically and mentally normal. As the family's stress diminished, so too did the hauntings. Janet and her siblings went on to live normal lives, and Peggy remained in the home until her death in 2003. Morris Gross and newspapers called it a real-life mystery.
So, yeah. I mean, fair play to her for staying in the house. I mean, they said the same about 30 East Drive, you know, the woman, the family that they lived there, the mother of the children and that. She was like, nope, I ain't moving out of my house. It's going to have to go instead of me, you know, and carried that on for years and years and years until whatever happened there. But, but yeah, I mean, fair play to them for putting up with that.
Yeah, this went on for 18 months as well.
Yeah.
The whole start to finish, all the hauntings.
That's nothing, mate. I lived in a haunted house for 15 years.
Yeah.
All right, it wasn't as regular as that.
Well, maybe you need to get hold of BBC and they can do a documentary on your haunted house.
Well, I don't live there anymore, so they'd have to get the permission from somebody else, wouldn't they?
But that is pretty much the story of Enfield. There's nothing really to it apart from what I've just said.
Fair play.
18 months.
It is quite compelling, though.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've got some other little bits of information, so I can go through the little bit of debunking kind of thing.
Oh, okay, we've got some debunking, okay.
So while there were plenty of eyewitnesses to the paranormal activity, there has been doubt cast on the photographic evidence.
Yeah, okay, yeah, I can see that.
So the images of Janet supposedly being thrown from and levitating above her bed were never actually witnessed in person.
Because it was set up on a time-lapse.
It was a rigged camera.
Yeah.
So because the photos were taken remotely, some have suggested that Janet could just be jumping from the bed.
It's a possibility.
And she's worked out that it's a 15-second...
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Timer and it, you know, she's just jumping.
Well, you'd hear those old kind of camera, it would be an old film camera, wouldn't it? It wouldn't be like a digital camera like we got these days.
Yeah,
you would literally hear it going as it winds onto the next piece of film. So you'd know exactly. Yeah, all you got to do is count the seconds, and you'd know when the next shot was going to be taken. So yeah, potentially she could have figured that out, and she could, like you say, have faked it.
Yeah, but then as we said, the only thing that confuses me there was there's no motion, you know,
no motion blur in those pictures. No,
and it's
like she's floating slowly across, like you said that she was thrown across the room.
Yeah,
when I looked at the pictures, it almost looks like she's just moving slowly, like levitating slowly across the room. Not like she's hurtling across.
But even still, there would... It's weird because there would still be some sort of movement, you would think, if she's being thrown or getting moved. But the picture is her dead still. And I guess she's off the floor.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's down to the shutter speed as well, I suppose, isn't it? I'm not a photographer, so I don't really know how to do all this sort of stuff. I know, like, back in the 1970s, there was ways of doing trick photography, you know, double exposures and that sort of stuff. But, I mean, I don't know how you really do all that sort of thing or how you'd professionally assess those photos.
I mean,
which is something that surely has been done, have they?
Yes. No, they did have people look at the photos
and say that they were genuine photos.
They seem to think it's genuine.
So, however that girl is floating through the air is not from a falsified photo.
No, it's definitely not falsified photos. The only other thing that adds into that theory of she could be jumping from the bed and it's perfectly timed is it turns out Janet was a gymnastic champion at school.
Okay, right, fair enough.
And one of the photos, the pose, looks very gymnastic-y. Gymnastic-y.
That's a good word.
Yeah, so that's just one kind of thing where people are like, oh, I don't know, I'm not too sure.
That's just kind of the kind of thing that seeds doubt into something that could be genuine, though, as well, isn't it?
But to be honest with you, that is the pretty much the only thing that people can kind of go by to try and debunk it. I've not seen anything else where people are like, oh, well, it must be fake because of this. It's only those photos. Like, all of the eyewitnesses, the police, the neighbours, everyone still to this day stand by what they saw. It's on police record.
Yeah.
So I've got... Do you remember you said about why is it always teenage girls?
Yes, yeah,
like
go
that?
On then, yeah.
So this is going to be a mouthful, but bear with me. And I laughed when I read this because I don't know how much I believe it, but here we go. So in 2008, physicists Piero Brovetto and Vera Maxia published a paper in which they argued that pubescent children, mainly found in girls, generate poltergeist activity by channeling energy into the quantum mechanical vacuum. Brovetto and Maxia maintained that during puberty, alterations to the body create electron activity that can bring on disturbances as far as a few feet around the outside of the brain. These fluctuations enhance virtual particles around the person, which increase the air pressure surrounding them. This could, in theory, be responsible for moving objects. Yeah, no. I know. I kind of felt the same when I read it. And I was like, well, I'll add it in anyway, because it's one explanation that is possible.
I think the idea, I mean, and this is not a new theory, but the idea of, like you say, teenagers, pubescent children, adolescents, because of their elevated brain activity, you know, the changes that's going on in them, particularly mixed with the stress that could be in their lives, that sort of thing. The theories have been brought forward that it could elevate what we call psychokinetic energy, you know, like telekinesis. So, I mean, even if it's involuntary, I mean, everybody would love to have the ability to just go, boop, pick that chair up, move it over there with the power of my mind and put it back down. You know, that's not how it works, though. You know, this energy just kind of spikes and it strikes at something. And maybe that's why Lego bricks and small items and stuff like that just get randomly thrown. And it might also explain why sometimes these objects are aimed at people. Like you said, that guy got hit in the eyebrow. And sometimes it's just people witnessing things flying off in a random direction.
So you're saying there could be some truth to this statement, then, this study?
Not that study.
A different study.
But, well, to be honest, I don't know, because they mentioned, was it quantum?
Quantum mechanical vacuum.
Yeah, I don't even know what that is, so...
We haven't got time for me to explain it, so...
Oh, have you researched that?
No.
No, I didn't think you had.
No.
But no, like the psychokinetic energy is a different thing to like any kind of quantum mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just it's like we said in the DMT episode, like what would the human brain be capable of if you could use more of it?
And yeah.
In stressful situations with teenagers, adolescents, sometimes you do find these things, sort of weird, random things happening.
Yeah.
And maybe that is the source of it all. But you've still got the voice of Bill explaining how he died, where he died.
Yeah.
And it's confirmed by his son. So.
That's what I mean. That's why I'm so 50-50. I have got a little information, bit of information here on The Conjuring 2, if anyone has seen The Conjuring 2.
I have not.
That is based on this whole story. It's
okay.
It's retelling the story.
Loosely based, I'll guess.
Well, I'm not very happy.
Oh.
Because The Conjuring 2 shows Ed and Lorraine Warren. Everyone knows them.
Yeah.
They're the two investigators that are in a lot of investigations that have their two cents, and they're almost like a credibility.
Aren't they the members of the SPR, the Society of Psychical Research? Yeah.
But they're like, they seem to be the two people that, if they turn up, they've got credibility, so everybody thinks, oh, this is definitely haunted, or this there's something going on here, because Ed and Lorraine Warren are here, so it's legit. Yeah. I'm not very happy about this, mate, and I'm going to tell you why. So, Conjuring 2 shows Ed and Lorraine Warren being incredibly involved in the case of the Enfield Poltergeist House. But this is extremely misleading.
Oh.
Guy Playfair, one of the investigators on the case, said that the Warrens turned up to the Enfield house uninvited and stayed for just one day. Ed Warren then said to Playfair, "A lot of money could be made from this case," which is why the Warrens themselves tried to do their own investigation.
Separate from the SPR?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, but...
So that's pretty dodgy, isn't it? I'm guessing that they were just trying to cash in on it.
They were indeed.
Much like Harry Price again.
But I'm not very happy with the fact that The Conjuring 2, they exaggerate the actual story of this.
And yeah, because it just seems like a fairly normal haunting, to be honest.
Yeah, like there's upside down crosses that spin on the wall and stuff, and none of that actually happened.
Right.
And then, like I said, the Warrens weren't that involved at all. They turned up for a day, said some stuff, and was like, right, see you later then. And they went
disappeared
off.
And...
But the whole Conjuring 2 film, they're like some of the main characters in it, and it's just, it's not right.
So are the Warrens the people that did the SPR report then?
Well, on this case...
Yeah.
If they're part of that crew, I imagine so. But
okay.
they were uninvited.
But they didn't go back to the house to do their investigation. They just turned up the once when we can make money off of this. And
stayed
then
for that period.
The rest of their investigation completely isolated from the where it happened?
No, they literally did it all in one day. So they turned up so that money could be made here, stuck around, tried investigating it. And because people weren't really interested in them, because this had been going on for 18 months or whatever, they showed up towards like the end or whatever. And I just think people weren't that bothered by them. They were like, look, what are you doing here?
Mate,
like, you're not just going to come here and try and get money out of this poor girl. Yeah. Mm. So I don't think they were impressed by the Warrens, the family. But Janet and the siblings still to this day stand by what happened to their family. The only thing I will say is, I mentioned it to you, Janet in a later interview has said that over the 18 months, the amount of people...
This was when she'd like grown up.
Yeah, I think she was like late 30s, early 40s.
Right.
She has said the amount of people that were in the house, the amount of newspapers, cameras, everyone, there was never any alone time. She quotes and says, "I may have exaggerated and made up about 2% of what happened." It doesn't sound great.
No.
But I can kind of put myself in that frame of mind. And if that sounds so weird because I'm about to say, if I'm an 11-year-old girl...
with a beard.
With a beard and tattoos, yeah. I imagine she's doing it for her own entertainment. Like, you've got 18 months of people in and out of your house every single day, near enough. I imagine you are going to love the attention as an 11-year-old girl, and you are going to play up a little bit.
For a little while, yeah.
But
keeping up a charade like that for 18 months, a year and a half, as an 11-year-old kid, I think that's happening.
Which is why I think she said only about 2%.
Yeah. Like I say, I could understand that if she embellished on it a little bit for like a couple of weeks. But then even if it's still happening to you, you're just going to get fed up of it happening.
Yeah.
And with more and more people coming in your house, I mean, you just want it to end, really, aren't you?
Yeah. And the last thing I'll touch on, because we're pretty much at the end of this whole story, is not only have I said that Janet, the siblings, the mother and everyone, all the witnesses, they all believe it. They're fully on board. They stand by it. Another family has moved in to the house since.
Yeah.
And they've not had any hauntings, poltergeist activity or anything. So my conclusion, and this is just me before we do the paranormality scale.
Yeah.
I think it has something to do with the divorce and the trauma on the children.
And
something being created, whether it's mental, I'm not too sure. It's weird because I do think there is some truth behind it, like the son confirmed about dad, all the witness statements. So I do think it is true, but maybe this haunting and this activity was specific to the family because of the trauma.
Because of that, yeah. And that's kind of what I was trying to touch on with the psychokinetic activity rather than the quantum mechanics. Generally, particularly with teenagers, when they are at particularly stressful times of their life, like you say, divorce and that sort of thing, their emotions are running high, you know, and that is when you do tend to see these elevated levels of like psychokinetic activity, and it can be attributed to poltergeists where there is no poltergeist, but again, there's that voice, and that's swaying me. That one is, man.
I think that's why it's so polarizing, Like, I'm literally split on it 50-50 because there's information there that I say, well, that doesn't seem made up, it seems quite legit. And if you didn't have so many witnesses seeing so much of this, I would be more in going the other way, saying, I think it's fake. I think it's made up. Yeah. But not just one police woman. There were several police officers, journalists, just all kinds, like neighbors. Like someone walked by, like a passerby walked by and something was getting thrown at the window. And yes, you can say there was probably someone stood in the bedroom throwing stuff at the window. But the activity seemed to be quite constant for 18 months. And just this sheer amount of witnesses in the house seeing it with their own eyes. Like the main thing that they kept saying, a lot of these people, was the furniture, the chairs, the chest of drawers, the cabinets. They're moving 3 to 4 feet and they're all in the room watching it. There's no one behind it pushing it. There's no fishing line pulling it.
No.
They're all there witnessing themselves. So there's things like that that are happening that go, well, this has to be truth. But then I'm not too sure because you've got the other things there where it's Janet has said, I exaggerated 2% of it. There's divorce there with the trauma.
It's a difficult one.
I'm so polarized on it. But that is maybe.
Also, I just want to say is obviously we're not the first people to cover this. Obviously. And everybody who has tried investigating this has not been able to 100% debunk it.
No, I don't think you can. No. It's.
Think it's quite compelling.
It's one of England's most famous cases. And I think that's probably why. It's because you just can't fully debunk it anyway.
No.
But yeah, it's the voice for me. Like, I urge everyone to go watch the video, see the photos, make up your own mind. We're just reporting it.
Yeah.
But that's all I got on it.
On the scale, to be honest, I'm actually going to go fairly high on this one. I do believe that it could have been like a genuine haunting that happened because of the stress that was on that family at that particular time.
Yeah.
I'm going to give it an 8.7.
Wow, that is high. I did not think you were going to go that high with it.
Mate, I believe in ghosts. I lived with one for 15 years.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to go as high.
I didn't expect you to.
No, I do somewhat believe it, but because I'm split down the middle, I think I've got to give it a fair average score.
Right.
So I'm going to give it a 6.9.
Well, that's higher than I thought you'd go.
I think that's fair.
I thought you was going to go like 6.2 or something.
No, because I got to give it respect as well for being one of the oldest classic stories of poltergeist activity for the UK anyway. So I'll give it a 6.9.
Okay, cool.
Because the voice has swayed me, but I don't know.
What did I say? 8.7?
8.7, yeah.
All right, give me a second. I think that gives us a 7.8 average. Think.
I'm not sure. I'll go for your word. Yeah, I'll take it.
Let's just call it a 7.8 average anyway.
Yeah.
No, I think that's good. Decent. Yeah.
Enfield
Haunting.
That is the Enfield Poltergeist. So if anyone else has any information that I've missed, then please let us know.
I'm sure there will be a couple of people write massive long comments on YouTube.
Yes. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that was, yeah, well presented, mate. Well researched, well presented. I think I believe in it. I do. I know there are different takes on the story that have been presented on different media. Everybody has their own outcome or conclusion, but I don't think there is a proper conclusion that you can draw from it. I think it's a strong case of a genuine haunting, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm swaying more that way. I am swaying that way, but I don't know.
There's always seeds of doubt with you.
There is. I'm just a little bit more skeptic. It's a weird thing, man, because I feel like since doing the podcast, I have opened my mind a lot more to a lot more different things. And certain things before that I would say is far-fetched aren't that far-fetched to me anymore. But
you're still on the fence when it comes to ghosts a lot of the time, aren't you?
Yeah. Even with aliens, to some respect, like, I really want to see it with my own eyes.
An alien?
Either. So alien, ghost,
I think everybody does.
Yeah. And I have got some spooky stories and stuff, but I don't know. I'm just one of them people that I want to see something with my own eyes. And then I can go, that's 100% true. Like, with everything that we study and research, some things I might believe more than others, and I might... My mind's still open to it, but there's always at least that 1 or 2% of me that has doubt with most things. And
you like to keep your feet firmly on the ground, don't you?
Yeah.
And your head out of the clouds.
Some of it I find so scary to think about as well. I'm an ostrich and I just want to bury my head and be like, oh no, I can't.
But this story didn't do that to you though, did it?
No. I thought this was
actually... Not like 30 East Drive when we covered that. Getting the goosebumps over that, weren't you?
Yeah, the photos in that as well. I didn't like seeing the shadows and like you can see like legs and arms forming. The
rosary
and stuff.
Beads.
Yeah. With this, the photographic evidence and the voice and stuff, it's kind of creepy.
It's less alarming, though.
Yeah. It's not a real, real scary thing for me. I was like, it's kind of a standard haunting in a way.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, let us know what you think. Do you believe that the Enfield haunting was a genuine haunting? Or do you think that it was just a very cleverly concocted hoax? I'm not entirely sure how they would hoax all of that, all of that activity. But yeah, let us know, paranormality.uk@gmail.com, or you can join our Discord or whatever, however you'd like to get in contact with us. I've said it plenty of times. If you'd like to send in your own ghost stories, please do. We're always happy to receive people's creepy stories, and sometimes we even relay them on our podcast when we do the occasional no subject podcast. So if you want to be featured on one of those, go ahead, let us know.
I'd like to quickly ask the listeners for one favour.
One favour?
One small, tiny favour.
This is our one call to action.
One call to action. It takes 5 to 10 seconds. If everybody listening just texts or messages one friend or family member about this podcast, Maybe we can get some more listeners and more people.
If everybody just literally texted their best friend and said, hey, I've listened to this podcast, I reckon it's good, you'd probably enjoy it.
Mm.
Give it a go. That's literally doubled our downloads.
Yeah. And we want more people to get involved.
And not everybody's going to do it, but we're going to try and encourage everybody to do it. Yeah. Please do it. Please. Right now, get your phone out. Well, you're probably already listening to this on your phone. So end the episode and then send that text.
Yeah, because we just want to extend our paranormal family and
get
this thing bigger. And yeah, we want to tell more spooky, weird stories and strange conspiracy theories. And we don't want to stop. And in order for us to not stop, we have to get bigger and we have to get more listeners and more downloads. So there we go.
That's the goal.
Yes. So that's the port of call for this week.
Yeah. And until next week, I've been Pirate.
I'm Josh.
This has been Paranormality UK. Ta-ta.
Ta-ta.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com. Code program.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.